So today on this episode, episode number 89 of the NP Business Matters podcast, I'm talking with Alicia Scott, who is a certified coder and does audits of providers' charts in terms of why we're not getting paid for the codes that we have done. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what are some of the most common things that she has seen, not just with nurse practitioners, but it really applies to all providers when it comes to putting the correct diagnostic codes on charts in order to justify those CPT codes. So let's go ahead and get started. Hello and welcome to the NP Business Matters podcast, the show that's dedicated to helping nurse practitioners just like you succeed in business. I'm your host, Barbara C. Phillips, founder of Nurse Practitioner Business Owner. And since 2007, we've been working with you on the business of being a nurse practitioner, providing education, resources, and support as you start, grow, and operate your own practice. Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just getting started, this podcast is designed to help you navigate the challenges and the opportunities of running your own practice. I'll cover a wide range of topics from startup and finance to marketing and operations. I invite you to subscribe and listen to each episode for tips, insights, how-tos that you need to succeed. To learn more about NPBO and our resources, visit us at npbusiness.org. Hello and welcome back to the NP Business Matters podcast. And if this is your first time listening to any of our episodes, welcome. I'm Barbara Phillips and I am the host of NP Business Matters podcast. So in today's podcast, we're going to be talking to someone who is quite knowledgeable about coding, doing audits, and how you can get some of those missed opportunities so that if you're seeing those denials, what is that all about in terms of your coding, not so much insurance rules and those kinds of things. So let me go ahead and introduce Alicia to you. So Alicia Scott is a certified coder, and she is the director of CCO.us. And this is a certification coaching organization where they do courses, exam prep, things like that for medical coding, billing, risk adjustment, and more of that. In addition, Alicia is also providing auditing services to individual practices to help them recover perhaps some of the claims that have been denied, help them capture more of the lost opportunities, if you will. So Alicia can be contacted at cco.us, as well as her website, her email address, which she shares at the end of the podcast. And I will definitely be putting that information for you in the show notes at npbusiness.org/89. In addition, we ended up toward the end of the episode talking about the new G-code for complexity. And she had some very interesting thoughts about it in that using it a lot the first year may bring a little bit more scrutiny. They will be looking at it and seeing how it's used and maybe even doing that. The OIG may even be looking at it and doing some audits. I know in some of the reading that I have done recently, there's still a lot of questions about how that code should be used and where it can be used. And I'll also add a link to an article from the American Family Practice organization that they have on their website about this and some of the questions people have been asking and some of the responses to that. And a lot of it is CMS has not expanded it to include some of the different scenarios that you and I might be working in. So That'll definitely be worth a read as well. And, you know, we also talked about having Alicia come back and maybe doing some more education on that. So if that's something you would like to see, please put it in the show notes. There's a place you can respond and write your own thoughts and feelings. And I would appreciate it if you would do that. So without further ado, let's go ahead and talk with Alicia Scott. Alicia, I am so glad that you're joining us today to talk about this topic, because certainly one of the things that I hear from people is, why isn't this getting paid, or how come this is being denied? And that's where your expertise comes in. So I wanted to talk about, what are you seeing as the most common problems that you're seeing with the NPs that you work with?
I think one of the number one things, and it's multifaceted, however, specificity is something that everybody gets drilled into their heads. Now, I do have to tell you that NPs are brilliant with documentation. Historically, the NPs that I work with, their documentation is much more specific. The detail, they tend to think outside the box, even in their documentation. And I'm not dissing our other providers. However, and I think you alluded to this when we spoke one time before, that nurses are just taught from day one, documentation, documentation, documentation. And therefore, they are very good at it. However, when I do audits and when I do education, I have found that there's links and causal relationships that a lot of our NPs aren't aware of. And it changes the codes. So an example would be hypertension. It's one thing to document that your patient has hypertension. And if the patient also has specific other diagnoses, it changes the hypertension code. That's the way we translate it. An example would be, you know, just straight up regular essential hypertension or malignant hypertension, even just basic hypertension is I10. And that's usually the first code that, if you're forced to learn codes, that you learn, because so many people have hypertension. But as far as the disease process goes, we also know that hypertension correlates with so many other diagnoses. If a patient has CKD, and it doesn't matter if they've got stage 2 or end-stage renal disease, the hypertension code changes. We translate it differently. So it's no longer I10. It's actually I12. And then it's further specified into the stage. So if the patient has stage 5 or end-stage renal disease, it's I12.0. Okay, that's easy enough. You don't have to memorize this, by the way. I'm just telling you so that you will understand that there's different ways that we translate the diseases. However, if the patient has stage 1 through 4, it translates as I12.9. Okay, so if you don't state in the documentation that the patient has hypertension, but they also have CKD because you're seeing them for their hypertension, then it's going to be billed out and statistically captured as I10, hypertension. Now, if you know that that patient has CKD, even though you're not addressing the CKD in that visit, and this is where old school and new school kind of changes because of risk adjustment and the rules, it's not why you're seeing the patient. It's the disease that the patient has. Okay, so again, why you're seeing the patient is how we've always done it. Well, I'm not treating them for their CKD. No, you're not. But if you look at the problem list, you see that that patient's a CKD patient and there's a causal relationship. That means that that patient is a hypertensive patient with CKD, not a hypertension patient. Does that make sense?
So it's just saying that this person with hypertension just has additional risk factors that go along with the hypertension and ups the
severity and complexity of the disease.
Yes.
And that's another thing, great, Barbara, to mention, because I do tell them, now that E&M is different, which thank the, you know, powers that be that they finally switched it to a more manageable medical decision making and
absolutely
and time. It just makes sense right now. The old school E&M was a nightmare. I hated the way we did it before, because medical decision making and the time that's involved just makes sense. It's common sense for that. But if you have a patient that is hypertension and that's and they have no causal relationship with it, the medical decision making is kind of straightforward, right? But if you have a patient that has hypertension and CKD, it doesn't matter if you're treating their hypertension or their CKD, one or the other or both, that day for that visit, the complexity is bumped up because you have a disease process that if a person has hypertension for a long period of time and it's not under good control, the kidneys are going to take the hit, right? If you have a person that has CKD, how many CKD patients don't have hypertension? Almost zero, right? Because then that's why the codes that translates it as a causal relationship. So it makes a combo code for it. So they're saying, no, I10 means that patient has hypertension. But when that person has CKD at any stage, they also have hypertension, and that we have to translate it different. The disease process and the disease itself has shifted. It's more complex. So,
right. And it is too, because if you stop and think about it, if I'm seeing somebody with CKD or excuse me, hypertension, and I'm looking at their medications, that is one of the things that I absolutely have to think about.
That's
the
right.
The labs, their medications, how does all of that translate? And so it does make it a more, a higher level visit code.
Well, and let's say I've also had, for Texas, there's a big nephrology group in the Dallas area. And a lot of the providers just deferred all of their nephrology patients to this other entity. So they would constantly tell you, but I don't manage their CKD. I manage their hypertension. Okay, that's fine. However, you have to go look and see what the nephrologist said, right? Yes. Well, guess what? That's medical decision-making. That adds complexity because you have to first defer to the nephrologist so that you can't defer to them unless you read what they said. You have to still go look at the lab work that the nephrologist did. You have to go, you know, so it doesn't matter that you're not managing the CKD. If you're managing the hypertension, there's a causal relationship. So you are managing both. So most NPs tend to be not, now this is, I'm not trying to bucket everybody into one bucket, but it's family practice for the most part, right? NPs are, unless you're specializing specifically, you're managing the entire patient. So you are absolutely managing every diagnosis that patient has, regardless if you see them for it that day. Now, you say in the past with E&M, you had to click off all the boxes and say, but that's not why I saw them that day. You know, I didn't treat their CKD. No, you only treated their hypertension. That's fine. But they have a causal relationship. And so you actually did treat their CKD. And I'm not saying that you document it that way. It's just that you say, I'm treating their hypertension. The patient has hypertension. And by the way, they have CKD. I'm not treating, you know, and so you're, the medical decision-making is bumped. Now let's go from hypertension. Well, and CKD, that's a really easy causal relationship that most everybody understands, because we know if you got hypertension for a long time, you got a kidney problem, vice versa, right? But there's a third entity with hypertension, and it's HP. So if you've got a CHF patient, if you've got a hypertensive heart patient, that changes the same code because it's a causal relationship. So I11 is hypertensive heart. I12 is CKD. Well, if you have all three, if you have a hypertensive patient that also has HP, it's I13 because they have three things going on. So the way I tell people to remember that, and again, you don't have to remember the codes. You just have to remember to document it. The coder's going to come back and clean up the code for you. But if you remember, I10 was, you know, we got one thing happening, hypertension. I have two things happening. I have a patient that's hypertensive. They've got hypertensive heart disease. So they've got hypertension and HP. Oh, by the way, they finally have developed CKD. I have a, you know, so now you've got I12. But if you have HP, CKD, and hypertension, it's I13 for the hypertension. Okay. So that's why specificity in the documentation counts. That's why problem lists need to be updated constantly. If, you know, so don't think about it. Well, I can't bill for that. I can't put that on the claim because that's not what I treated the patient for. No, it's what the patient is.
Okay. You do treat them. So in terms of, because of course we want to make sure we're getting paid for the work that we do. Mm. So we may not be treating that heart disease that day or right. the renal failure that particular day. However,
it comes to
what our decision making is
right.
when we look at that whole picture. And if we don't code that, then we're not going to have the higher level visit code. And it's like a term you used earlier. It's a missed opportunity in the type of reimbursement you may receive.
Let me give you another example. Let's think about, you know, documentation I've read. So we have a hypertensive patient. And why would you put a hypertensive patient on lisinopril? You know, it's a great hypertensive drug, right? But it's got more than one drug in it, right? It's also got a diuretic, isn't that? You know, so that's great. Now, if you have a CKD patient, if the patient's having problems with their kidneys, that kind of helps too, right? It's keeping them flushed and stuff. Now, I don't know all the ins and outs about why you would prescribe one drug over another, but let's just say you start this patient on lisinopril and they're doing pretty good, you know, but then they come and tell you, hey, I've got this cough I can't get rid of, you know, and these are like classic things. I know that, you know. And he's like, okay, I've been on this lisinopril for about 3 weeks. I've got, you know, it's like this allergy dry cough. I can't get rid of it. And so your little, you know, the spidey sense goes up and says, you know what? It's probably the lisinopril because this is a classic symptom. You either get this cough or you don't. So let's just change that up. And if that's the case and the patient is just a hypertensive patient that you're switching other drugs, you got a multitude of choices, right? Well, throw in the patient has HP or the patient has CKD. Just pick one. If you're going to switch lisinopril to another drug, they're not just a hypertensive patient, right? You've got to think in your back of your head, are they on anything for their CKD? Are they taking anything that's going to conflict? I got to think about what medication that they can take that is going to still treat their hypertension, but that isn't going to mess with their kidneys or isn't particularly harsh on their kidneys or isn't going to interact with another medication that maybe they're taking for their HP that, that would be a good choice. Now, I don't get to make those decisions. I read about it, but even though you're only treating that day, that hypertension, you're thinking of all the other diagnoses that that patient has because you're switching a medication, a simple hypertension medication. Now, you do this all day long. You do this constantly. You've got like three drugs you can go to besides lisinopril, and you probably have favorites that work for you and they're in your mind. But you don't understand that just because you have that memorized and it's easy for you to recall doesn't mean that's not a higher level of medical decision-making. It actually is. The more diagnoses that that patient has in your little spidey sense brain, you're running through all that stuff. Now, for me, from the outside looking in, your medical decision-making is rising by the minute. But for you, it's like, oh gosh, I know. Well, I'll just put them on, you know, this other medication. Mm-hmm. No, it's just because it was simple for you doesn't mean that it was simple for medical decision-making. The medical decision-making is bumped up. And that's what I see with a lot of providers, not just MPs, is this is so easy for you. You don't think about the complexity that's involved.
That's right.
The one that's telling you, hey, this is really complex. The medical decision-making is bumping But if you don't tell me that that patient has CKD or that patient has HP, the medical decision making is, okay, you're just switching lisinopril to, you're going to try them on Nadolol or something, you know. And so it isn't, and also it's not necessarily about reimbursement. It's statistics. We want to know statistically, if you take them off lisinopril and they have hypertension and CKD, why you chose this other medication. Because statistically, that changes protocols and disease process. So if we jump from hypertension, let's jump to diabetes. Diabetes is, you know, your straightforward E1 1.9 type 2 diabetes is like 98% of all diabetics are type 2. The guidelines and the code set even tells us that if the provider doesn't know what type of diabetes, or they haven't documented if it's 1 or 2 or something else, you default to type 2 because that's what it usually is. So we start with E1 1.9. Type 2 diabetes, no complications, plain Jane diabetes. Now, if that person is on insulin, you're going to throw another code on there. Now, that's easy for us to look at because we can just look at the med list and say, yep, person's on insulin. Okay, I'll add that Z79.4. Doesn't matter to you, you know, but because insulin is going to be documented. All right. Now, if the patient has CKD, whether you say the CKD is related to the diabetes or not, it is related because the code set tells us it's a causal relationship. We automatically link them. That patient is no longer at E1 1.9 because they actually have a complication and it's called CKD. They're at E1 1.22. Okay. Now, you don't have to know the codes, but you have to be aware that that's a causal relationship. So that patient is not just a diabetic anymore. They're a diabetic with a complication, a comorbidity, CKD. That's one. So they're never, ever, ever, ever again going to be an E1 1.9. They are always an E1 1.22, regardless if they're stage 1 or 6. Okay. Then you think, well, now they have neuropathy, because that's really common, right? So you think, oh, well, okay, so they've got, are they an E1 1.9 and an E1 1.22 because they're CKD, but they also have neuropathy? No, they're an E1 1.42. So they're an E1 1.22 and an E1 1.42. So you think, okay, wait a minute, you're throwing all these numbers. Don't worry about the numbers. The fact is your patient is never, ever again a diabetic with no complications.
Well, you know, one of the things, you know, just to back up here, I think most people do need to worry about the numbers because most people don't have access to a coder, a professional certified coder. So
I don't want them to fear me regurgitating these codes off the top of my head. You don't have to know them like that, but you do need to be able to use your encoder to say, wait a minute, these are causal relationships, right? The right. code will change once they have a complication, unless it's like a toe, an abscess of toe, then because that can go away, right?
Mm-hmm.
But neuropathy is not going to go away. CKD is never going to go away once the patient gets it. And then a lot of times the provider thinks, well, they have CKD too. So it's not 3 or above, because we really don't kind of worry about it until they're 3 and above, right? Mm-hmm. And, but the fact is no, they're stage 2, they have CKD that changed their hypertension code and that changed their diabetic code. They're never going to be an E1 1.9 again. And so that means, you don't use that code anymore. If you use that code, you just downgraded your medical decision-making. Your claim went out that said, now let's back up. Let's think of another reason. So now we've talked about medical decision-making. Let's talk about auditor red flags. So if I come in and audit you, I'm going to scrub your reports with a fine-tooth comb, but I'm just going to tell you about it and educate you. But there's people that get paid to find mistakes. And so what they're going to see is, okay, this month you billed out, they were at E1 1.9. The next month you billed out that they were E1 1.22. And then the next month, you put that they were E11.42. And then the next month, they're in E11.9. Well, what are they? Because, you know, now you're not going to get dinged per se for that because you don't get paid for that. You get paid on the CPT codes unless you're dealing with a risk adjustment. But still, that means your medical decision making is going up and down, up and down, up and down. If they see you make simple mistakes like that, that are basic 101 coding mistakes, that tells them, they're going to make other mistakes. I'm digging in deeper.
Right.
You know, right. Think of a person driving down the road. If that person's driving down the road and hitting, you know, and they're, why do you think they pull people over when they're not driving in a straight line or they're driving too slow or they're, you know, or they got a tail light out? It's a red flag. It says, I'm going to pay attention to you. People who get paid to find mistakes, and they will ding you on everything. And then you go back and you say, okay, you can justify 75% of that. And they're like, oh, okay, but I still got you on 25, you know?
Right.
So these things that are simple and easily correctable with just a little bit of knowledge and awareness will help you overcome some audits. It will improve your medical decision-making. It will justify it because that's what diagnoses do, is they justify the medical decision-making. They also justify time. Why did you have to spend 50 minutes with that patient? Well, because I put them on insulin for the first time. And this patient isn't, you know, they were so sure that, you know, they were going to be able to control this diabetes with diet and exercise, but they have a family history of it and they're doing everything right, but it's just not going to work. So we're going to have to go from metformin to insulin. Well, they're concerned, you know, they have friends who are diabetic. They don't understand the diabetes. You know, so how do you justify spending 50 minutes with a patient who's been diabetic? You know, well, you're going to explain it because now you're putting them on insulin. And then the next visit, you throw in their hypertension. Why? Because they're stressed out. They've changed the way they eat. They're adjusting their insulin. They're not sleeping at night. They're not, you know, all this other stuff. So by you documenting all your concerns, what you tried, what did work, what hasn't worked, what you plan to do in the future if ABC doesn't work, that elevates medical decision-making and it justifies you spending 50 minutes with the patient. Now, time, let's talk about E&Ms and time. It is much easier now to show level fives if you base it on time. Mm-hmm. However, because of that, OIG says, well, you can't be dropping the level five just because you spent 50 minutes with a patient every time they come in, because we don't know you're not talking about your favorite fishing spot, right? Because if the same diagnoses are in every encounter that you're doing a level five and you're not changing anything, you're not changing the diagnosis, you're not changing, you're not showing any concerns, you're not saying that the patient has a cognitive disability or that they're medically illiterate. There's now an SDOH code for that. You know, if you're not saying why you're spending each time and everything's staying the same as far as the diagnoses and stuff, that's not justifiable. Again, you can pull level fives, especially NPs, because they go into depth. They're treating.
Well, and in primary care, my goodness, nobody is a simple patient. But if you have that documentation that says the person isn't understanding, they're fearful, they have all these other things, you're still going to be okay. There are still people out there that are afraid of 99214s and 215s.
And that's a red flag too. I can't tell you how many times I've had providers tell me, I literally heard one provider say this, and you guys have probably heard too. I always do level threes.
Yep.
Or I always do level fours because I figure that if I accidentally over it, it should be a three. I'm probably covered because I know a lot of them should have been fives. So I'm just going right down the road. No, That's a red flag. That's like saying, I know the speed limit is 65, so I'm going to go 55 always so that I never get pulled over. Well, if you go under the speed limit, that's just like speeding to the cop. Something's wrong, right? You're hiding something. You know, is this person really drunk and that's why they're going really slow? You know, and because they don't want to get, you know, that's a red flag. You're going to get dinged on that. And if you think you're a single provider practice and nobody's going to look at you, then you are, I can't help it, you're stupid because they go after everybody. I can tell you, you can go in and look at the OIGs. It's small practice and big practice. They don't care. Right. And unless it happened to you or somebody you know, then you think you're, you know, it's kind of like taxes too, right? Oh, they're not going to audit me. I'm nobody, you know, and I don't make any money. Now, it's just a drawing system that you might get audited. It's not, they don't pick and choose. Same thing with these auditors. They will drill down and they'll say, statistically, this person does a 4 every single time. Are they out, they're outliers. How come compared to their peers, they're always a level 4 when, you know, 80% of the time when they should be 60 to their peers, audit them, you know, and it doesn't matter that you're not taking all the money that's allowed to you. No, it's the fact that you're doing something wrong. If you're doing that wrong, then you're doing something else. And
well, and the undercoding is just as much of a problem as the overcoding. Both of them are fraudulent.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. And so the best thing to do is to always document everything. And again, NPs are really, really quite good at it. But some of the missing documentation that I see is concern. What's your concern for that patient? Maybe it is hypertension. I'm concerned that the patient is eating, their diet isn't under good control. I'm concerned that the person still smokes and they have no desire to stop. I'm concerned that the patient is obese and they're getting very close to morbidly obese. And so, and then you can say, this is what we've tried so far, right? I've tried A, B, and C, but now next visit, we're going to try D if their blood pressure doesn't come down. And then what are you predicting? What are you looking for? Their labs are not within in, you know, I've got one NP, she puts what the gold labs are every time that she wants that, even like hyperlipidemia, they're not within goal. And then she'll list what the goal is going to be on every one of the visits. You know, they're not reaching goal. And then it's, their blood pressure monitoring at home. They brought in the list. Every day they're checking their blood pressure, and she will either list all of the blood pressures or that she'll state that they're within range, and then they'll state the range. So what are your concerns? What are you trying? What worked? See, a lot of times you forget to write what worked, what didn't work. So the patient isn't going to stop smoking. I've tried. You'll say that every time. I've tried. I've counseled. They don't want to do the Chantix didn't work for them. They are too nervous. They're changing jobs. They, you know, too stressful in life. They can't give up smoking. But I did get, you know, but what they did do is they gave up salt. And sure enough, they lost 5 pounds since their last visit and they're changing their diet. So this worked. This didn't work. This is what we plan to try next. The patient's going to start walking. The patient, you know, they're going to do this. They're going to do that. The patient now realizes that if they lower their BMI, their blood pressure could come down. So documentation like that is brilliant. That's not usually what you see. What's your concern? What have you tried? What are you, what has worked? What didn't work? What is the future? What do you plan to do in the future? And so on and so forth.
Yeah. So this really comes down to, you know, going back to what we said earlier, NPs learned how to document.
That's
and
right.
So this actually goes back to almost And I hate to say this because it's, for some of us, it's a really bad word, but it's really documenting the care plan.
Yeah, you're right.
In the chart. And we can do it in such a way that there's not a burden of the documentation like there used to be. I mean, hey, everyone, I used to make sure I had to count all my bullet points and make sure it was all in there.
Don't
and
have to
write
do that
it
anymore.
Out by hand in the days before the EMRs and stuff. So, I mean, today's documentation is just a breeze compared to that.
And you can do templates within most EMRs for, I'm going to create a hypertension template. I'm going to create a hyperlipidemia template. All those things that are just basic that every patient has. I'm going to do a diabetic. And it's almost like the annual wellness visit template, right? Yeah. You know how you say, okay, they went and saw the eye doctor, or I did an acuity test, or, you know, all these little things. Just make you a little template for each little thing that says, this is the range for their hyperlipidemia. They're in or they're out, you know, and then one more thing.
And then, of course, you can adjust it for each individual.
Right. Yeah, because we say copy and paste is evil. Well, there is a place for copy and paste. And one of the things is, for example, CKD patients, such a missed opportunity with them because so many other things affect that. But for CKD, bring in the GFR labs. Say what the last four GFRs, because if you have three GFRs listed, now a coder can't go out and look, they can go out and look at the labs, but they can't code off the lab. But if you copy and paste the lab into your encounter note, they can adjust the CKD from 3A to 3B, which shows my patient, it doesn't seem like much, but they went from a CKD 3A to a 3B. They're not getting better. That's means that they're, you know, and also a really good pathology, copy and paste that pathology findings, echo findings. I've had them copy and paste a big thing of the echo because missed opportunities like ectasia, aneurysms, radiology reports, any imaging, just copy and paste it, what they said, because we cannot code off of those reports. I can code off of it if it's in your documentation. And chances are, if you don't copy and paste it, you're going to document it wrong because they document it really high specificity. You don't. And, you know, you've got a person that has a fractured wrist. No, they have a Coley's fracture of the left wrist. You know, oh, okay. Well, that's a more specific code. And Coley's fracture also shows age. You know what I mean? That's like the most common fracture when you fall. So that specificity, just go ahead and copy and paste it in.
And that really just then adds to all the decision-making that you're having to do with the patient. So that kind of copy paste is okay. Copying and pasting each and every note is the thing that is not okay.
HPIs cannot be copy and pasted.
So let's talk for a minute, because like I said earlier, most NPs do not have access to somebody who's can actually code their charts.
That's when they hire me to come in and clean up their codes.
Okay. So that's what I was going to get at. So if somebody is seeing a whole lot of, you know, maybe denials that are based on, it's, you know, maybe I bill out a 99215 and it comes back and says basically that, you know, I don't show the medical decision making for that or something. I can bring somebody like you into my practice or at the magic of the computers through whatever, and you can help me become more specific with my charts or even audit my charts, correct?
Right. And another thing that I see that's really often missed for NPs is prolonged services.
Yes.
So they go in and they say, oh, yeah, I get a level five because I was with that patient for, you know, 52 minutes. Well, you were, but a level five is like 40 minutes. So did you know there's a prolonged service for the extra minutes that you were with that patient?
Right.
So you go in and I say, no, you actually have two E&M codes. You're going to your level five, and then you're going to also do the 99415 or the 99417, you know, because you did document time. And right. then they think, oh, no, but I was only with the patient. What if you were only with the patient for 35 minutes? No, you documented that you reviewed the oncology report before they came in, and that took you 5 minutes. And then you were with the patient for 35, but after the visit, you set up a referral appointment for them. You made two phone calls to see why their whatever medication wasn't covered, and you talk, you know, and set up the pharmacy thing. You had to do all this other stuff that, but you documented that you did these things. That is counted. What happens when you saw that patient, you gave them the medication, a prescription, they called you the next day and said, I went in, that prescription is going to cost me $52. I don't have it because I just, but I don't have the medicine or the money. Can you change it up? Well, let me check. Oh, by the way, you can tell them that there's this discount card because this is a new medication and da, 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 da. So you get paid for that time on the portal, that right. digital services. And then there's another code that's for 7 days surrounding that encounter. And right. let me tell you, NPs are the ones that end up spending all that time in the portal, on the phone, doing all that work because they take care of the entire patient. And you get reimbursed for that.
Yeah. So this was something actually Dawn Self came and did a webinar on it. Yeah. And so our NPBO members have access to mm-hmm. those webinars where he did one on prolonged visit codes. He did one on, it was really a very good interactive on E&M codes yes. to really get you to see how you can do for your CPT codes. Now, right. at that time, we weren't talking diagnosis codes like you were just talking, mm-hmm. but this is basically all on the CPT. And actually there's a new CPT code out now too, that people are having a little trouble with. And that's
G2211
for complexity. Yes.
G2211. Yes. And Dawn and I actually talked about that. And so I've got a little thing that I wrote up. It's called, you know, it's longitudinal care plan. And so I call it the LCP. So with my nurse practitioners, and I'm going through and looking for some of my audit, but some of my go in after they've coded, and I come in after them and I just make sure all the coding's done correctly. And then I submit it to their biller. And several of them said, oh, I want to start using that G code. Well, you can, but there's steps and documentation that have to be done before it's applicable. And let me tell you, OIG is going to come down hard next year on yeah. this code. So you better have all your ducks in a row. And so what we decided to do, excuse me, is we said, okay, we're going to call these your LCP patients. And every time I see, or you see a patient that you think qualifies to be in that, in your program, your LCP program, we're going to document it in the note, you know, not in the note, but in their, on their encounter list. And so you've got a complex diabetic patient with multiple, you know, comorbidities, or you got a brittle diabetic, or let's say you have a cancer patient. Or you have a patient that has, there was one the other day that had cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, diabetes. I was like four or five things. I was like, this is absolutely an LCP patient. But so you're first identifying what your criteria is for an LCP patient. Okay, it's going to be complex or whatever, because it's kind of vague what they tell you. So your criteria in your office is going to be ABC. All right, great. Put it in your compliance notebook and then say, now you have to identify which patients you're going to put into your LCP. Okay, got it. Then, so in other words, you're defining what's severe and what's complex about that patient. Then you're going to need to document every time you want to use that code. And most of this you're already doing, the history, the plan of care for that diagnosis, what the goal is, I even have a note card on it, the past negative outcomes, concerns, and update the LCP as needed. So do it like a little annual wellness visits where you got A, B, C, D, E, F, G. This is what I got to do. You know, and if nothing changes, that's great. But you got to document if their diabetes is why they're an LCP patient, that has to be done. And then third, you do not add that to the E&M. So you could, in other words, have a patient that you're cleaning this room and out of their ears, right? So that's going to be what, like a, say you're doing a level three, but the G code that because they're an LCP patient, that's something that's ongoing. You're doing it, but you separate that. So you can do a level three, you know, and that, that G code, because you're monitoring and staying on top of them. So it's not a level five every single time you do it. You can't add the time, in other words, is what I'm saying, for your LCP component as well as the sick visit. These are two separate visits, but you're not going to use an modifier to say, you know, that you're doing like an annual wellness and a sick visit. And then you don't ever do modifier 25s, in other words. So you're doing a annual wellness visit, but you're also doing a sick visit. Then you use the modifier 25 and it shows that you're doing two. That this G code doesn't go like that. So in other words, it doesn't matter what E&M level you're using. You can't use your G code level and add them together and make a higher E&M. So that's all you got to do. But once you get into doing it, it's just showing that you're continually monitoring this more complex, severe patient. Right. And because of that, because you're doing it in your head anyway, so now you're going to get reimbursed for it and compensated for it.
That's great. That's great. And I think probably there's going to be a lot of questions about that. And maybe and I should talk about doing another either podcast or maybe even a webinar to kind of go over to that in more depth.
I'm always leery about jumping into these new codes the first year because you are going to be, they're going to look at you very closely to see if you're making mistakes. So you want to make sure you have all your ducks in a row.
Yeah. And I think that's the most important part. I mean, we want to do a good job for our patients, but we also need to be sure, particularly for NPs in their own practice, it's really important that you're protecting yourself and your practice. It really
is. Correct. Because if you go under because of a mistake, then your patients aren't going to be treated anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. This is one time where you have to make sure you come first. Mm-hmm. And because otherwise there's not going to be a you to take care of everybody else.
And so, we know, Alicia, that the NP is almost always the, if you've got a practice, that means you're needed.
Right. Exactly. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be on this podcast today. How can people find you?
It's real easy. You can go to the website. I work with CCO, and we're at cco.us. That's the website. You can send them a note if you want to get a hold of me, or you can reach out at Alicia, which is A-L-I-C-I-A, at cco.us. That'll be a direct email to me.
Thank you.
Oh, and I'm on LinkedIn. I definitely would love to have you guys jump out and find me on LinkedIn.
Okay, excellent. And I will have all the links in the show notes so that you can find this information if you're driving and you can't write it down right at the moment. So mm-hmm. Alicia, thank you so much for being a guest on the NP Business Matters podcast today.
Thank you.